That's really loud.
And welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 70. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and together we come to this podcast to discuss it all. Except today's a little different. But with me, as always, is my good friend...
Matt Rundquist. Yes, Travis, that's right. It's a very special episode where we assign each other media that neither of us has seen. So this week, we both watched Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, and we both listened to the American band American Football.
Yes, well done with the name. I understand you. That it's a bit of a tongue twister.
Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Marcel the Shell. He's a shell. He's got shoes.
So yeah, this was an interesting week, and I think these picks are strangely synchronous.
Really? Interesting. I'm gonna love hearing that theory.
Ooh, I'm shocked that you're not immediately on board with that assessment.
It feels like a bit of a stretch to me, but I'm interested to hear what the idea is.
All right, great. Well, you want to tell me how your week was?
My week was very good. So as you remember from last time, it was Girls Rock Week this week. Now, I did not do anything during the week this week. I was just in a support role this week, driving the truck from the gear storage area to where we have the camp, helping out with logistics at the showcase. And then also I did help out as the sound guy at the dress rehearsal on Friday, just so that I knew what kids were playing what instruments, who needed like a lefty guitar, who needs their microphone on during certain things. So I did all of that, but that was it. Amy was a band coach. Her band did very well. They got the opening slot, which is sort of one of the primo slots, and they did a really good job. So I'm really proud of everybody.
The band
involved.
That she was coaching. The band that she was coaching.
Okay, yep.
Got it. Interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds like so much fun.
It is so much fun. It's really a joyful experience as long as you can just kind of roll with whatever happens. And that's something that I and Amy are pretty good at. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I recognize that in you. And I think that that's one of the fun things about being an entertainer, and I love doing improv, and I love this kind of like organic, like anything can happen, like just go with the flow type of mentality. That's very much my jam too.
Yes.
People are gonna think we got disconnected. Well, that's great. Anything else fun?
Nothing else fun. Nope. We're ramping up to July 4th week here. So we're getting some fireworks every night, which our dog really hates. But other than that, I would say it's been pretty quiet.
You know, I've been out for a couple of walks now with Coco, especially like last night where we got some fireworks, and she didn't seem to care.
Oh, that's great news.
Nothing was too loud or too close, but I'm like, oh, interesting. This would be good. She's kind of like this dog who doesn't care about fireworks.
Yeah. For sure. So. It's really tough. It's funny. Our biggest boy is the one who struggles with it. And it's tough at times. It's really difficult.
Oh, I'm sorry. Poor baby. That's a shame. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Do you have a thunder shirt for him or something like that?
No, we don't. We do. We actually muzzle him, which helps a little bit. So greyhounds at the track are muzzled in situations where they're around other dogs to, you know, keep them from nipping each other. They have very thin skin. And a lot of them are sort of comforted by it. So, you know, that's one thing that we do to help him. And then he's on Prozac now after his sort of biting issues from earlier this year. Those things are helping. We do have, like, little dog earmuffs that are great, but they're really only helpful if you kind of know ahead of time that there's going to be loud noises. So obviously on July 3rd and July 4th, we'll probably let him have those. But, you know, they're not something that he can wear, like, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, great. Well, I'm not going to bury the lead. This week was my birthday. And
your birthday? Cool. Happy birthday. I definitely didn't remember to wish you happy birthday off the pod, so.
You did, didn't you? I thought you.
It's an illusion, Michael. Come on, man. We're.
It was an interesting week. I did another rehearsal for the stunt thing that I talked to you about. I spent a large part of Thursday at the DMV to renew my license, my driver's license, which. I did all the advanced stuff. I set an appointment online. I did the testing online because I needed to test this year. Like, sometimes you can just do it online and it's no big deal and they'll send you a replacement license. I think probably because I had a new address, they wanted me to go in person, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so I did everything right and then went in and... Because the computer system was weird and I had failed the motorcycle part of my testing, and then the system was weird and wouldn't let me test it again, but it somehow registered on their end three failures for my motorcycle test. And so, but I passed my driver test first thing.
Sorry, do you have your motorcycle endorsement?
I did for years.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, for like almost 20 years now. Because I had a scooter, I had to get a motorcycle license to drive my Vespa.
That makes more sense. I was very confused, but
I'm not a motorcycle guy. Mostly because of the shifting I don't like. Like, if I had an electric motorcycle, I think I might enjoy that, but also it does still scare me a little bit, so... Anyway, through some fluke, I had to be there for hours, and it was just—it was not great, and I really hated it. But then on Saturday, which was my actual birthday, I had no plans, no friends offered to spend time with me. That sounds so sad. Could you put in like an sound effect in there?
It's entirely possible I can do that. Yes.
But coincidentally, there was a group that I just joined called California Gay Adventures, which is this, you know, kind of adventure group that goes hiking and does things and does trips and stuff like that. And they're all gay. And they had scheduled
gay,
a thing.
Gay.
Yep. They'd scheduled a thing that was a ropes course. Which I don't know if you know what that is, but...
I definitely know what a ropes course is, yes.
So, yeah, this is one of the biggest ropes courses in on the this side of the country, I guess, other than, like, Colorado maybe has a bigger one, but, you know, that's pretty far away. So this is three levels of, like, ropes things that you have to, like... Anyway... this is exactly up my alley, and I loved the adventure of it. And you climb all the way to the top, and then you zip line down. And I did the whole thing twice. I was only one of two people who did it more than once. A lot of people like skipped to the end. Like you can take shortcuts instead of going around and doing all the little obstacle things. I did great. I got those little calluses on my hands. Like I knew I should have worn my gloves, which I brought with me. But didn't wear the first time through. Anyway,
always
and then the
wear
second
your safety
time,
equipment, people.
Yeah, well, they didn't say it, and nobody else was wearing gloves. But I was really using the ropes a lot because they say like holding onto the wires is cheating. The wires that you're secured to, right? So I didn't. I only did it the way you were supposed to. So there are parts where you don't have anything to hold on to, and you're just kind of making your way off on across like 50 feet up in the air. Anyway, it was really fun, and I did a backflip off the platform for my second zip line down, and I got that on video. It looks pretty badass.
Nice.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. And then I didn't do anything for the rest of the day.
Did this one have a leap of faith? Like a hanging like trapeze thing where you jump off of the top of a post to a trapeze thing?
No. I would have loved that. Where you jump and you have to grab onto it.
Yeah, have to grab onto it. Yeah. And so there's...
Wow. But you're secured, so it's
somebody belays you, you know.
So all of this was hand secured. So you right. there are wires going from each post to each post, but you have these little crab claws, and you have to detach yourself from one wire and attach yourself to another when you're going. And some people were detaching both crab claws at the same time, mm-hmm.
and that was not a good idea.
Very dangerous. So, anyways, that was fun, and I didn't do any writing, but I did do some work on. I actually used ChatGPT to help me figure out. I've been struggling to figure out the name of the vampire hierarchy, like the group that is the group that like I think I had them called like the High Council or something weird like that. I was like nothing really. It didn't sound cool and vampire-y enough for me, mm-hmm. and so what I ended up with was the Archondacy. Archondecy, and I really like that, and mm-hmm. so and it turns out that the head of the Archondacy is Salon, who is the Athenian who is credited with bringing democracy to Athens.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And so, yeah, so the
and
story
he's also
is,
a vampire.
Yeah, so in my story, vampires brought democracy to humans in order to kind of settle things down.
Ah, sure, make them more pliable and delicious.
Make it easier to form a diplomatic relationship with them so that they can coexist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, that's one thing. I do have a correction to something I said last week that I just noticed. Monica West is a hair salon here in West Hollywood, not a bookstore.
Okay. There you go. Santa Monica West.
No, it's actually just called Monica West. I was right about that.
Oh, it is just called Monica West. Okay.
But it's not a bookstore. It's a salon. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool. Thank you very much for that. Important correction.
We strive to be accurate here on exposing ourselves. So
yeah, we're not just saying things for sure. Hey, Travis, what do you say we shake things up and get into the meat? Wait,
yeah,
I'm
let's
sorry.
Get to the meat.
I did that totally wrong. Let's get into the meat.
Okay.
The entree.
Yep. That's no right. And now, and we can shake things up and do. Let's do the music first, huh?
I don't think the music first is shaking things up. I think we've done the music first a few times
in a row. I think whatever we choose to do is shaking things up at this point. There is no rhyme or reason.
That's fair. All right.
So tell me about American Football.
American Football is a Midwest emo band, and they're kind of one of the bands that defined the genre. What is Midwest emo, you ask? It's sort of like if you take... So do you know what emo music is, by the way?
Other than just like being sad for sadness, you know, on purpose.
sort of. It's a genre that's sort of associated with teenagers and people in their early 20s, and it kind of grew out of like pop punk. A lot of the similar, you know, musical choices in emo to pop punk, but with subject matter that's kind of a bummer, basically. And you know, if you're familiar with the concept of like a sad boy.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a Simpsons quote where Bart says, making teenagers sad is like shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah. Something like that. So emo, a lot of eyeliner and so forth. Midwest emo, now that I've listened to this album, is a little more of a subtle flavor, right? Still sad boy music, absolutely, right? But with an emphasis on sort of delicate interplay between the guitars and not so like distortion heavy and also not so hook heavy. This is also an early math rock album. So math rock is something, it's known for like intricate time signatures and a lot of back and forth, almost jazzy interplay in between the instruments. Yeah, this is a genre that I didn't have any experience with, and I found out recently that it's actually kind of influential and kind of popular. American Football recorded this album and then kind of broke up for quite a while.
When was it?
This was 99 was when this was released, and they were college students at, I believe it was the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, the big Big Ten school down there.
So kind of also right in the midst of this movement towards authenticity that we've talked about so many times.
Yeah, yeah, they're right in the heart of that. And this is very authentic music in that sense, right? It's a bunch of guys singing about their feelings in an attic in Champaign, Illinois, right? So it doesn't get much more authentic.
The saddest place on earth.
The saddest place on earth, yes, Southern Illinois. So anyways, and so I wanted to listen to this and hear what it was about. Because I didn't really know. I was actually really, at one point, I was really concerned that this was going to be like crazy heavy and that you're going to be like, what is this, right? Because emo can be pretty heavy music, but this goes the opposite direction, goes towards the lighter, sort of cleaner guitars and quieter vocals, that sort of thing. So I'm glad I didn't accidentally give you a screamo album, but I'm going to guess that you weren't in love with this. I'm hoping you didn't hate it, though. What did you think, Travis?
I was not in love with it, nor did I hate it.
Okay.
This is better than average, I would say. This was soothing music. I think that's the word that popped into my head the first time through. I was worried when it first started. The first song starts with this little like warm-up guitar riff thing, and then you hear a little talking, and then I think someone's like, we're gonna keep this in the song, and then they start playing, and the first little couple seconds were discordant and not fun to listen to. I don't know why they kept it in. It's not a good choice, if I'm being honest. But then once they started playing, the music itself was very comforting, soothing. Like, it felt like if you took a yoga rock class, like where they were playing not like Eastern music, you know, to do yoga to. This is the type of music that you could do yoga to, right?
Okay.
It wasn't super energetic. It was fine. It's not the kind of music I wanted to listen to on a hike, but thankfully I've still not been hiking because of my foot. So just walking around with Coco outside, whatever, or just puttering around the apartment, it was kind of fine to listen to. I did find myself drifting my attention away from it, mm-hmm. right? There's one song kind of right in the middle where I think it's an instrumental song. And it just made my brain zone out almost completely for the rest of the album. Like, I found myself not really focusing on it, you know, the way I like to.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to think of instances where this song would be, where this album would be good to listen to. And I'm thinking maybe in the same way that I like listening to NPR.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of good for that moment, right? So mm-hmm. in the car, while I'm shopping, it's not going to capture your attention, but it's kind of nice to have on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I did like, as you mentioned, the instruments. The instrumentals are fine. They sound good. Nothing terribly, I don't know, interesting, I guess.
I would say it's not very hooky, right? Like, there's
nothing hooky.
Yeah. So one of the things with math rock is that there's always something new happening in it. There's like in a lot of the music that I play and listen to, there's like repeating, you know, four measures repeating or eight measures repeating in the music, and then it's just the words that are different over the, you know, like verse, chorus, verse, right? This is not like that at all. There's always something new happening, but there's not necessarily anything that, like, jumps out and grabs you.
Hmm.
You know?
That's interesting, because there was... I think I was feeling that it was a bit repetitive at points, so...
Yeah, and I think it's always changing, but it always... Because the kind of the mood is the same across the whole thing, it feels very... Like, it feels very samey... But the actual notes are changing, right? And so,
okay.
So it's constantly evolving, but not necessarily in like a, this is very quiet. This is very loud. This is, you know, there's not,
sure.
I think for me, it's got the same kind of feel throughout, which it gives the impression of being repetitive, even if, you know, if you're really clued into the music, you're like, oh, that's a different, you know, that's a different thing that they're doing there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I did appreciate the musicality of it. Everybody who was playing on this band was competent,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not especially talented. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a Brian May in this group. I don't think there's a Travis coming up with a drummer name. What's
Barker?
The guy's name from
Travis Barker? Barker.
Thank you.
Wow.
I was almost there, halfway there.
Wow, look at you.
I'm growing. But I think they were all just kind of competent and decent, but nothing super special. So
there is the faintest whiff of straight white boy about this music, right?
Yeah.
Of like,
yeah.
Like, we're good enough, you know, like we're good enough
well,
in our friend and like, not necessarily laziness, but just sort of like you'll want to listen to us because our problems are straight white boy problems. And,
yes.
you know, like gosh, that feels like a read. I didn't mean to read them there, but maybe a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. Yeah, I don't know that somebody in a different life circumstance makes this music, but I'm certain that somebody in a different life circumstance who makes this music, maybe it doesn't become popular, right? There's part of you that's wondering, like, why did people latch on to this? Like, I don't hate this, right?
Did people latch on? What's their audience like?
I want to say they have about 50 or 60,000 subscribers on YouTube Music.
Hmm. Yeah, 34,000.
34,000,
like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, so, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah,
I feel like,
right?
We had someone a couple of weeks ago who only had like 150 and they should have been much bigger.
Yeah.
This feels like, yeah, 30,000 isn't hard to get on YouTube, I think.
I mean, I don't know. I don't have 30,000 and I've worked very hard.
No, neither do I, I guess. But
yeah.
I know a lot of people who do. So, you know, and they just put the work in. I don't know. The singing was
Ask you about this. Yeah.
Really?
So you think it was fine? I actually thought you were going to hate the singing or the recording of the singing.
The recording was bad. So that was my thing. The levels were bad. You could barely hear what they were saying. And I think that that's part of what made me disinterested mentally. Like I wasn't able to focus on things because it was like, I can't hear what you're saying. So what you're saying doesn't matter to me. And I thought early on the singing was worse than it was later in the album.
More used to it.
Maybe. That's possible. That's definitely happened before. But I feel like early the singing was much more just kind of more talky singing. I was trying to think of a comparison. And actually, weirdly enough, I think the comparison I came up with was Blink 182, where they don't really sing. They're kind of just talking, you know, talk singing a little bit. Of course, they're much more interesting to listen to. They have, you know, much more energy and much more, you know, more lyrics, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So right about the same time, too, right? Blink 182
yeah.
was end of the 90s?
Yeah, end of the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. So,
interesting.
That's all I feel like. This is very unoffensive music.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that for sure. I think one thing that I did want to call out, I don't have a whole lot to say about it that you haven't said or that I haven't already said, but these song titles are like the most emo thing, right? We've got The Summer Ends, honestly, with a question mark, for sure, which if you're from the Midwest, for sure is like the most Midwestern phrase, right?
Yeah,
for sure. Then there's a series of long ones right in the middle. You should know I should be leaving soon. but the regrets are killing me, and I'll see you when we're both not so emotional. Like, this is sad boy music, right?
Yeah, it is. Oh, poor sad boys.
Yeah, poor sad boys. So
I'd be interested. You know what? One of these days we should reach out to one of these 90s bands and see if they'd be interested in chatting.
Oh, my God.
Especially someone like this who isn't huge. I feel like they'd be accessible.
I mean, like, here's hoping. Here's hoping. You know, it's funny, though. People
okay.
are... you, now that it's 25 years later, are you all
okay?
Did
it get better?
Did it get better? Do you regret some of your choices? Yeah.
I mean, that was my message to myself. My younger self was, it gets better. I did one of those videos early on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly would love that conversation. And I really liked this music. I will say this did... Definitely, I experienced the thing that we often experience with this, which is the more I listened to it, the more I liked it. The first time I listened to it, I was like, oh God, I've made a mistake. Not only is Travis going to hate this, but I also kind of hate it, right? Not hate, but like 5, maybe even a 4, right? And each time I listened to it, I like unlocked it a little bit. I think I listened to it 4 times, unlocked it a little bit, got more into what they were doing. And I'm definitely going to be higher than average score, but we're not into the scoring yet. But I think we'll be there soon.
We could be.
We could be. Yeah. And yeah, so the point being, this is music that does not necessarily reveal itself to you on first listen. That's my point.
That's good to know, I think. Especially if this far, if anybody listening has kind of thought maybe that sounds intriguing, then it's good to know that it gets better. The music gets better.
Yeah, it gets better. All right, Travis. Well, what do you want to give for a rating to American Football?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty good 6 for me. Okay. I didn't hate it. I just didn't love it. And it's if I were to choose... If I have a moment where I would listen to this kind of thing, I'd rather listen to NPR. That's just my want, right?
Okay. So. Okay. Yeah. Get a little knowledge with your mood.
Yeah. The nice thing about NPR is you can understand the words.
It is very well recorded. Well, for me, I think this is a 6, edging towards a 7 for me. But I'm not going to throw this on a ton in the future, but I will definitely listen to it again. I'm looking back at my old ratings right now, and I gave Gregory Alan Isakov a 6. And I'll say this. There's that one song that I really like by Gregory Alan Isakov, and I'll listen to that a bunch more. But this album, I would rather listen to this album than sort of the non-hits of Gregory Alan Isakov. So that feels like a 6 edging towards a 7 is right where I want this to be.
Great. That sounds pretty good.
All right. Cool. Well, Travis, tell me about Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
So Marcel the Shell with Shoes On is a 2021 film that was based on a series of 3 YouTube shorts that came out over the last decade and or the prior decade. I'm not sure when the first one. I feel like the first one was like 2012, something like that. And it is... exactly what it says. It is about this shell, this kind of anthropomorphized shell who has one eye but is wearing shoes.
And he talks like in this voice that's like this. And he says things like, I always wanted to have a dog, but I just carry around a tag piece of lint around attached to a hair.
Stuff like that. That was not good. It's all fun. It's actually funnier than that. And it is created by Jenny Slate, who does the voice. She was on Saturday Night Live for a while, and then directed by Dean Fleischer Camp, who was her boyfriend at the time. And then they got married, and then they divorced before they made this movie. So that must have been an interesting experience for both of them. Now, the YouTube shorts are just a kind of a series of one-liners of Jenny doing that voice and saying kind of non sequitur type things. Like Marcel is almost observational, but in a weird way. Like, I have a character named Roy Blunt Jr. who says weird things like, how much deeper would the ocean be if there weren't so many sponges at the bottom of it? Stuff like that. And that feels like Marcel's kind of vibe, that kind of like a little Shell's observations at the world. You know, there's one that he goes that I really love where he's like,
people tell me that my head is too big for my body. And I'm like, compared to what?
Like, that's a great line. And so how do you make that into a movie? It was my real curious question going into this. And they did a really good job at it. They craft this story about Marcel being part of a community of shells. And one day, all the shells except Marcel and his, I want to say, grandmother. Mm-hmm. They're all gone, and through various reasons. And so he is left alone, and then this guy moved into the house who is a documentary filmmaker. And so the whole movie is guised in this kind of shell of a documentary film. And that's kind of how it goes. But it's a little bit of extraordinary feat of filmmaking. So I'm curious, before I say more, and I have a lot to say, Matt, what did you think of Marcel the Shell with Shoes On?
This is a fascinating movie for a lot of reasons. Probably the most important of which is, yeah, how do you take three YouTube shorts that are essentially a bunch of one-liners and spin it into a 90-minute movie? Like, that sounds like actual torture, right? and we've gotten a lot of movies along those lines where somebody takes something that just fundamentally can't handle the weight of a 90-minute story and yeah, sort of falls
almost
down.
Almost every Saturday Night Live adaptation, right?
Sure. I'm thinking of the movie Sausage Party, which had a hilarious, hilarious first 5 minutes and then completely fails to deliver on that premise in any way for an exhausting and horrible, horrible rest of the movie. And
okay, so this I'll take could Sausage Party off of my list.
Yeah, it's really atrocious. I mean, I would rather watch the first 5 minutes 12 times in a row than watch that movie. Okay. But anyways, it's neither here nor there. This is a lovely extension. And I think what's interesting about it is that it doesn't try to overreach, right? It doesn't turn Marcel into an action movie star. It doesn't try to tell like the great love story of the ages. It just says, okay, we're going to take Marcel and we're going to explore the relationship between him and this filmmaker who is the one who made the YouTube shorts, right, which are sort of incorporated into the movie a little bit. And so we're going to explore that relationship. We're going to explore the relationship with his grandmother. And then we're going to solve this sort of central mystery of where did the rest of the shells go? And because of the sort of slow pacing of the whole thing and the oddball humor, it ends up, you know, really kind of landing the plane. Now, I will say they appear to have gotten, they squeezed this as hard as they could to get it to 90 minutes, right?
There yeah. are, is it exactly 90 minutes?
Something like that. Yeah. It's,
it is 90. It is exactly 90 minutes long.
It's exactly
well done.
90 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, but it works, right? It absolutely works. I certainly hope there's not going to be a sequel or anything. And I think it did reasonably well in the theater, but not enough to make anybody go, hey, we should make another one of these. And yeah, I think that's great because this is a really, really interesting experiment. And it's beautiful. It's a well-told story. And it gives you like this humor is like it's really like nothing I've ever seen. Like, yeah, sure, it's a observational. There's a little bit of Jack Handy there, a little yes. bit of like the sort of shower thoughts, beautiful idiot type of thing. But it's definitely its own thing. The way that his thoughts tell you about him is really important too. Like Marcel is a child, right? And
right.
nobody ever says he's a kid. Right? but just the way that he thinks about the world, the way that his brain jumps from topic to topic. Have you ever tried a raspberry? Like that thing?
I love that that is the question. Have you ever eaten a raspberry? Like, not tried it. Have you ever eaten a raspberry? And there's a specific phraseology there that is just... Yeah. And it's his way of asking questions of people, like getting to know people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's just a very kid thing to be like, here's this very important topic. And also, have you ever eaten a raspberry? Right? It's very not disingenuous. Is that just ingenuous? I'm not sure. Yeah. It's very honest.
Super,
and authentic.
Super genuous.
Super genuous. Super genuous. And so I really like that. I really liked this movie, right?
Wasn't it though?
Feels and different. It feels
speaking
different.
Of, I mean, yeah. And wasn't it comforting in a way? Like, if that's what I meant by the connection between this and the music we listened to. Like, this movie feels very soothing to the mm-hmm. brain, right?
Yeah.
It's because it's not a lot of dark humor. It's not a lot of action. It's not a lot of it's the really brilliant stop motion animation kind of disappears, and you don't really notice it until you kind of try to pay attention to it.
Honestly, one of the things that I really like, you maybe can struggle a little bit with this movie, is because you want it to sort of meet movie expectations, and mm-hmm. it's not going to do that, right? So you can spend the first 5 or 10 minutes being like, when are we going to get some
When's
movie
the movie
stuff
gonna start?
Going? Yes, yeah, right? Yes. But if you don't fight too hard against that, just relax into it. It's a really enjoyable experience.
Well, and it's also subtle, like because I think a big part of this movie is the friendship between Marcel and the filmmaker. Yeah. Is his name Dean too? I forget.
I can't remember.
I think it is. And so the Dean has a whole backstory. Like, he just got out of a divorce, and he's kind of renting this Airbnb where Marcel happens to live, and meets Marcel, and is like, oh, I should make a video about this shell that's kind of so amazing, and at first he doesn't want to be involved. Like, he has that documentary filmmaker kind of thing where he's like, oh, I'm only observing and I'm not allowed to interact or whatever. And yeah. Marcel pulls him out of his shell, metaphorically, and they become friends. And so Dean, at some point, Dean helps Marcel find his family and they become, legit friends. So there's so many layers to this movie. Because it's also about growing up. Mm-hmm. It's also about letting go of things. It talks about loss with Marcel's grandmother, whose name is Nana Connie, and is played by Isabella Rossellini, mm-hmm. and is delightful. She calls him Marcello. And it's so sincere and touching, and her want for him to grow and become his own shell is wonderful. And yeah, it's also about internet fandom and internet fame and
yeah,
fame in
I'm
general.
Glad that part was addressed but didn't take over the movie,
No, it was just a thing that was there, although it was influential. Mm-hmm. Because, it's that which leads to Nana Connie's kind of injury. She gets hurt and then has to, fake her own health in order for him or in order for Marcel to allow himself to reach out to, so the two of them watch 60 Minutes together.
Right.
And are big fans of 60 Minutes, which just happens to be the organization that reaches out to them after the YouTube videos explode. And Leslie Stahl wants to interview Marcel. And so Marcel doesn't want to do it because Nana Connie got hurt. But she has to convince him to do it. Anyway, it's so wonderful. There's also a great scene where Marcel makes Dean take him out into the world to find the car. because he's like, oh yeah, how many cars could there be in the world? Let's go find it. Uh-huh. And so they have to go up high, and so they drive to the top of a hill. It all takes place in Los Angeles, by the way, which I thought was interesting. And they drive to the top of the hill, like the Hollywood Hills, and look out. And Marcel is just, it's his first time seeing anything out of this one house and this one yard.
Yeah.
And it's a moment that is beautiful and kind of, and it's also hysterical because he throws up. these cutest little throw ups in the car. He's like, I'm so sorry. I'm so, so sorry. And Marcel, like, it's fine. It's just a little speck. I laughed out loud at that.
So, yeah, that was good stuff.
Just charming.
Yeah, it's a really charming film. It's really lovely. I really highly recommend it to anybody who's looking for a change of pace, especially if you've been following along with the podcast and you've seen a bunch of horror movies. This is not a horror movie. It's a really, really good one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you like it because it's this is a good family film. I was worried that you would have world building issues, that there are, you know, oftentimes you have difficulty getting past the questions that arise. Like, how does a shell have life? You know, those kind of things.
No, but that's the thing that I like about this type of movie, right? Is that it says this happens, right? There is a shell. Nobody in the movie wonders why the shell. Nobody in the movie is surprised by the anthropomorphic shell. And so I can accept that, hey, anthropomorphic shells are just part of this world. That's okay, right? I don't mind that at all, you know? Now, if you had given me a CGI Marcel the Shell, I would have had a problem with that. Like, I would not have loved that. Like a Sonic the Hedgehog with the, you know, obviously CGI'd. Yeah, I think that would have... The movie depends on that stop-motion animation. For sure, right? If you had a CGI Marcel, it would be awful.
Yeah, that's a really interesting take, and I agree completely. I think that you're absolutely right. The CGI the stop motion animation of it all was really amazing too. Like, some of the stuff that they do is so, and the integration of it. So if you're creating a whole stop motion world, like the Pinocchio movie or any of those movies from
Coraline.
The guys who did like Coraline, or Box Trolls, those kind of things, those are certainly amazing. But I think there's something next level about incorporating that stop motion into the real world.
Yeah.
In the way that they do. Marcel is also very resourceful. Like, he builds these, like, machines that help him do things. And he has these, you know, these little inventions that do different things. So,
you know, one point about that, though, which I absolutely loved, is sometimes Dean says, you know, what would you do if I wasn't here? And Marcel is just like, sometimes I can't have things, right? Like, sometimes I just... You know, and I thought that was really lovely, right? The idea that sometimes people just go without because they don't have help, you know?
Right. And conversely, because he is there, it's his duty to do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I love
like
that.
If you're part of my world, be part of my world.
Yeah.
Which I thought was also beautiful. Yeah. Just levels on levels on this movie, and I kind of wanted to watch it twice before we talked. I didn't really have time, and not because I super loved it. Like, I'm not super in love with this movie. I don't think I'm going to give it a 10 or anything, but I do think it has a lot going on that you cannot catch on just one viewing. And so I'm curious to give it another go at some point.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a little bit of risque humor that is very subtle. And everybody on screen just kind of laughs about it, right? Like the implied risque joke. And
wait, what was it?
I love that. Well, I'm not going to explain. If you're not old enough to understand the joke, I think you probably just need to watch the movie again.
Well, which joke was it, though? I'm old enough. Just refresh my memory.
No, you look very young.
Thank you.
I can't remember the details of the joke, and me telling you would not be funny, so I don't want to do it.
Well, you can cut out me asking for it then if you don't want to deal with this moment.
This is a really good movie. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, unless you can think of anything else that you want to add, I'm just looking through to see if there's anything else. It is interesting that they got Leslie Stahl herself to come on and play herself.
Yeah.
Like in the movie. I thought that was fairly interesting. There are some interesting, yeah, you know what? That's fine. I'll leave it at that. What do you give it as a rating?
I believe this is a 9 for me, and that's more of a feel thing than anything else. It just doesn't quite feel like a 10. I think maybe if they had been able to find a story that had a little more meat to it, right? Like ultimately, the story is just enough to carry the movie, right? And you know me, I love plot, and I love story, right? And so it's maybe just a hair too light for me to give it a 10, but a really strong 9. Very inventive humor, wonderful performances, wonderful animation. Just a vibe that I really appreciated. So I'm going to give this a 9.
Yeah, I think for me, it's going to be the same. I think a 9. I was thinking that I might actually go a little lower than a 9, but I couldn't tell you why. One of the things I disliked, I guess, is that I, strangely enough, had a problem with some of the things that happened. Like, how did he do that? It's unrealistic that he could, like, some of the things I really like him using honey to climb up a wall in order to get something up on the wall. I loved stuff like that. But then, like, how did he make the zip line from the tree, you know? Or how did he hook up the mixing machine to the tree to shake down the fruits? Stuff like that. It pulled me out just a tiny bit, even as charming and cute as all of it was. But I want to say, so that maybe dinged it for me a bit, but then as much as I've been thinking about this movie over the last few days and just even talking with you about it now, it fills me with a warmth and just soothes my brain in a way that is so enjoyable. And I really, really do want to watch it again soon-ish. So I think this will be a movie that I could revisit every once in a while. So, yeah, I think a 9 for me, too.
Awesome. Well, that's really great news.
Yeah. So we are going to be taking a bit of a break. You are traveling?
Yes, I'll be gone the next 2 weekends, which means when, listener, you hear this, I'm going to be in, I want to say, Arkansas, somewhere in the Ozarks, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'll be gone for a couple of weeks, so we will be back on, oh gosh, I don't know, late July.
It doesn't matter. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We'll be missing 2 weeks, right? So we'll be back in 3 weeks? Is that the math?
I don't know how that works. Yeah, we'll be back in 3 weeks. Yeah, we're going to miss 2 weeks, so we'll be back on the 3rd week.
Great. Yeah, we thought about having a guest host, and this was on me. Kevin, if you're listening, I'm sorry I didn't get back to you for details on guest hosting duties. We'll see you guys later. Now, I am going to give you a bit of an assignment that is related to you traveling.
Okay.
And so for our next movie, I want you to watch the Pixar movie that you have not seen, Onward. Onward came out in 2020, right in the beginning of the pandemic, and it was one of the first big movies that didn't get its theatrical release that everybody was planning on, and so it went straight to Disney+. Luckily, in Disney's mind, they had set up this streaming service that they were like, we need to get people here. So let's put this brand new big Pixar movie on Disney Plus. Stars Tom Holland and Chris Pratt as brothers who live in this kind of Dungeons and Dragons world. But like, what if that fantasy world evolved? And so they have all the modern conveniences of electricity and running water and indoor plumbing. And all of that caused them to forget magic, essentially. Mm. And so, and that is the basis for this movie. And but the two of them discover a quest that they need to go on. And so they go on this quest together. And yeah, it's an interesting movie. It has a lot to do with brothers and a father and son relationship that we don't often see explored. And so I'm curious to see what you think of it.
Yeah, sounds like a blast.
Yeah, what do you got for me?
Travis, have you ever heard of the band Slater Kinney?
I have heard of them. It's a couple of girls, right?
It is adult women, yes. They arose out of the...
Little teeny weeny girls.
Little teeny weeny girls. They
Women, I apologize. It's a couple of ladies.
They arose out of the Riot Girl movement in the Pacific Northwest in the early 90s. They were actually a three-piece for a long time. They went through a couple of drummers early on, but they eventually landed on Janet Weiss and then the two guitarists, Corinne Tucker and Carrie Brownstein. Carrie Brownstein, you might actually know. Slater Kinney went on a hiatus for about 10 years, and while they were on hiatus, she created the TV show Portlandia with her friend Fred Armisen. So Carrie Brownstein is an accomplished sketch comedian in addition to being a guitarist. Anyways, they recorded 7 albums together and then went on hiatus. And then when they came back, they recorded one more album together, and then Janet Weiss left the band. So now there are just 2 women who are permanent members of the band, Corinne and Carrie. I have the album that I love from the 90s called Dig Me Out. This was their 3rd album. It's the one that sort of broke through into the more popular, still college rock radio, but like really made them one of the big bands in the Riot Girl movement up there with like Bikini Kill and... really Bikini Kill. Like, it's kind of them and Slater Kinney for a lot of people. So, what else do I have to say about this? This is like punk, right? But it's got a different edge to it. There's no bassist. It's 2 guitars and 2 lead vocalists bouncing off one another. I really love this. Corinne Tucker has a powerhouse of a voice. Carrie Brownstein is a little more normal, I want to say. You have a question.
I just thought this was more comedy, and so like I am surprised to learn that A, they've been around this long, and B, that it was not a comedy thing, because I think I knew about the sketch comedy connection.
No, this is very straightforward Pacific Northwest punk. Yeah. So I'm hopeful that you like this. It might be a little too loud for you, but you've liked some loud things in the past, so this will be an interesting one to explore.
All right, good. Well, and I'm back. I'm definitely going to be back on the hiking trail before we talk again, so I will experience this out and about where loud is good.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I'm excited for you to hear it. Hey, Travis.
Hmm.
If people want to talk to us, did we already do this?
No.
Oh, good.
We mentioned fans, but we didn't. We mentioned listeners, we didn't.
Well, you know what? If fans want to talk to us, they can email at us. Email at us? Wow, man. This is going well. If fans want to talk to us, they can email us at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com or look up our Facebook page. It's Exposing Ourselves. If you give that a like and we get to 100 likes, we can actually live stream on the Facebook page, which we can't do right now because Meta are jerks. So
yeah, jerky jerks.
Jerky jerks.
Also,
right.
I've been making an effort to put out stuff on the Facebook, so you can see the graphics, the album covers and posters that we're posting, and comment right in there, and let us know what you're thinking.
Yeah, for
what,
sure, for
what,
sure.
What you thinking?
Hey, Travis.
What's going on in your head?
thank you for exposing yourself to me this week.
Matt, thank you for exposing yourself to me.